This is Fresh Air. Amos Oz has been called Israel's most persuasive spokesman to the outside world. Oz is a novelist whose subject has been the history of his country and the divisions within it. He's also a co-founder of Peace Now, a group that's called for negotiations with the Palestinians and the creation of a Palestinian state. We called Oz earlier today at his home in the Negev Desert in the south of Israel to get his thoughts on the war. Like all Israelis, he has a room in his house sealed off and his gas mask within reach. I asked him about the psychological effect of that on him and his family.
We have been through many wars in our life. We have been through fighting. I've been on the battlefield myself, but this is spatial. This combination of gas and Jewish state certainly hits a chord and touches a nerve. And what's moreover, a German-manufactured gas aimed at Jews in the Jewish states is something which touches a very deep emotion in all of us.
Have you been able to write or work during the last week?
Very little. I try to keep some working routine, but I do a part-time job for the army as a traveling lecturer, and it's very difficult to concentrate.
What do you do as a traveling lecturer for the army?
I just talk about current events to groups of reservists.
What have you been talking about for the past few days?
Trying to explain the historical perspective of the conflict. How did we get to this point, and what might follow once this is resolved? And what is the actual connection between the Israeli-Arab conflict and the Gulf War? And who is Saddam Hussein? And what is Syria all about? And just the basic facts of the present situation.
Are there subjects or opinions that the military asks you to stay away from?
No, definitely not. The only thing I am restricted, or I restrict myself from, is party politics. But they all know that I am a leading dove and one of the leaders of the Peace Now movement. This is no secret. I am known around the nation and very controversial. They all know exactly what I believe in and what I maintain about the future of the territories and the prospects for peace with the Palestinians, compromise with the Palestinians. And this is no secret. I keep away from party politics when I speak in army units. That's the only limit.
I remember in our last interview a couple of years ago, you said that when you're arguing with yourself about a subject, you end up writing a novel. And when you know exactly where you stand, you write an angry article telling your government what to do. Which do you expect to be writing now about this? I mean, do you feel like you really know where you stand and that things are black and white? Or are you arguing with yourself and dealing with ambiguities?
On this specific issue, I'll probably write something I've never written before. I'll write an article praising my government for its reasonable conduct. You know, I'm embarrassed to have to say this. It never happened to me before, but I'm going to have to praise this government, which I dislike immensely, for its reasonable conduct throughout the crisis. Not just in the last few days, but in the last few months.
What specifically will you be praising about the government's conduct?
The low-profile policy. The idea that Israel ought to try as much as possible to keep out of it, the remarkable restraint of the Israeli government vis-à-vis the Persian Gulf crisis, and the decision not to take advantage of what is essentially an internal Arab tragedy to make profits for Israel.
I remember your previous novel, Black Box, explored the fanatic personality. And this has been an interest of yours and something that you feel you've had to deal with politically. Are you interested in Saddam Hussein on that level?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The man, in my view, the man opts to a position of a modern time Saladin, the unifying leader of all Arabs, the man who several hundreds years ago defeated the Crusaders and won Islam its last spectacular military victory ever. So he casts himself as a modern-time Saladin. And he obviously opts not for the leadership of Iraq, but for the leadership of all Muslims. His rhetorics, especially in the last few days, is the rhetorics of the holy war of the believers against infidels. Infidels being Christians, Jews, and treacherous Arabs.
Well, as a writer, can
quote,
you...
Quote, unquote.
As a writer, can you speak a little bit more about the rhetoric he's been using? You must be very interested in the language that he's choosing.
Yes, the language he's using, and I've been listening to the words of Saddam Hussein to the extent that he managed to get on the air and express himself. This is a very medieval rhetoric. It is a crusading rhetoric, if you may speak about an Islamic crusade. It is a black and white world with good guys and bad guys. It is a manifestation of the urge to annihilate the enemy at all costs and to dehumanize the enemy. In fact, Baghdad Radio this morning used the horrific expression that the goal of the Iraqis is not just to liberate Palestine, but also to cremate the Jews in Palestine. Now, cremate is a Nazi term for the Jews, of course. It means burn them with gas. This is a not only a pan-Islamic and a fanatic rhetoric, it is also an anti-Semitic and a quasi-Nazi rhetoric.
When there is a leader who is trying to dehumanize you and the people of your country, what do you think, what does your gut tell you and what does your mind tell you about the appropriate way to kind of emotionally respond to that?
Well, I have a very clear-cut emotion, namely that the son of a bitch better be removed by his own people. But I refrain from hating the Iraqi people. I refrain from hating Arabs. I keep reminding myself that the Arabs are victimized by such rhetoric and by such leaders, no less than the Israelis are, and no less than the rest of the world. So there is no hatred or anger in my heart toward the entire Arab people or toward the Palestinians. There is sadness, there is disappointment, there is a certain amount of disillusionment, but certainly not hatred.
I'm wondering if this is the kind of thing you end up talking with the Israeli military when you're lecturing?
Always, always. As a matter of rule, time and again I mention to our soldiers, to our reservists, that there is no point in hating every Arab for being an Arab, and that many of them are as much victims of this fanaticism and ruthlessness as we are, perhaps more so, because they suffer more, and they will suffer more. He inflicts more suffering upon his own people than upon ourselves, every day, every moment now.
When you're talking with the troops about that, what kind of dialogue gets going? What kind of response do you get?
Mixed. Of course, some people are angry not only with Saddam Hussein, some people are angry with the entire outside world. Why are they always so harsh on the Jews? Why are they only sympathetic with Israel when Israel is actually hit? Why is the Jew popular only when he is actually on the cross, and the moment he gets off the cross and punch back the teeth of his enemies, he is immediately condemned and portrayed as a monster? Why are there such expectations that Israel be the Jesus Christ of the nations in terms of turning the other cheek? So I hear this argument from many people, not from all of them. And then, not from the majority, but from many.
And then what do you say?
Well, I say, look, this goes beyond emotions, and Israel should take it as a compliment that, say, public opinion makers in several countries have much higher moral expectations from Israel than they have from nasty tyrants. We should take it as a compliment. We should take it as a tribute. The fact that, say, American public opinion expects Israel and assumes that Israel should display higher moral norms in, say, in dealing with its enemies, is not an insult, it's a compliment.
Israeli novelist Amos Oz speaking to us from his home in the Negev Desert in a conversation recorded earlier today. More of our conversation after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Israeli novelist Amos Oz is my guest, and he's joining us from his home in the Negev Desert in the south of Israel. Do you think that the war is uniting or dividing Israel now? Is it having a unifying or divisive effect?
This war is uniting Israel. It's the first time in many years that I can see something like a national consensus, partly because, as I said earlier, the policy of the government is fairly reasonable and sensible, even in the eyes of the doves. There is no disagreement over the viciousness of Saddam Hussein. There is no disagreement over the type of desired solution. And the Palestinian question, which has been the main divider, the main point of disagreement between doves and hawks in Israel, is at the moment moved to the background, to the backstage. But let me add right away, by the same token, I think the Palestinian problem is not resolved. And even though the PLO have been stupid and wicked enough to endorse Saddam Hussein and probably will be made to pay for it, the Palestinian problem will not go away. And once this Gulf war is resolved, we Israelis will have to face the Palestinian problem and deal with it, because the PLO is not a synonym for the Palestinian problem. It's a syndrome of the Palestinian problem.
Well, you know, you say that this crisis has united Israel. I'm sure it will further divide the Palestinians and the Jews in Israel.
Not necessarily. I think if Saddam Hussein is beaten all the way, I mean beaten all the way, then many Palestinians will sober up and start thinking in terms of compromising and accepting the idea of coexistence. By coexistence, I mean a two-state solution, a partition of the land, which has always been my conviction. If, on the other hand, Saddam can claim victory and is regarded triumphant in the eyes of the Arabs, then, as I said, there will be an impact of euphoria and ecstasy among the Palestinians, and they will take an even more uncompromising stance.
You're a dove in Israel. Does that mean that you're anti-war? Do you oppose all war?
Oh, no, no, no. I am a peacenik, but not a pacifist. I have been on the battlefield twice in my life, and if I had to do the same thing under the same circumstances again, I'd do it with all my heart. I am a great believer in peace between nations, but I am not a believer in turning the other cheek. And I have always believed that there is one thing which is even worse than applying violence, and this thing is giving in to violence. But as a peacenik, and this is my point, I would only fight for two goals, for survival and for freedom. I would never fight for interests. I would never fight for resources. I would never fight for better frontiers. There are only two things which would make me sacrifice my life and, if necessary, kill other human beings. A, to save the life of those dear to me, and B, to save my freedom. Nothing else.
Tell me what your plans are for the rest of the day. Are you going to go outside today?
No, I'm going to spend the rest of the evening with some friends, watch television religiously, and if there is a siren, and there might be a siren, just go spend part of the night or most of the night in the sealed room. This is 6:30 p.m. local time, and in the past few nights, this is about the time when we had the missile alarm, and we are emotionally prepared that this happens any second now. It might even happen in the middle of our conversation. I mean, nobody knows. One learns to live with it. In a way, you know, this has been the condition of Israel for 40 years now. Not so extreme, not so dramatic, but we have always lived under a constant threat. Ever since the creation of this nation, we never had a single day of a full-scale peace. We have always lived on edge. So the way we live this evening is only a symbolic intensification of the Israeli experience in general.
What else have you been doing since war started as a writer and as a leading dove in Israel? What else have you been doing to talk to people and to be active in the community?
Well, I've been involved in many internal discussions within the peace movements about where the peace movements should go from here, discussing what exactly the peace movement ought to say at this point in time and what it should not say at this point in time. And I've been inserting a great deal of time in trying to persuade my colleagues and my friends in the peace movement to follow a certain line and to avoid some other lines.
What's an example of one of the lines you'd like to see avoided?
Well, I think we ought to dissociate ourselves completely from the peaceniks in the United States and in other countries who are right now demonstrating against the Gulf War because they are against any war, period. And I think the Israeli peace movement ought to be utterly dissociated from those peaceniks.
Why? Because of what you were saying before, that you don't oppose all war?
Absolutely. Because I think this war is absolutely justified. Because my peace-oriented attitude does not mean give in to violence. It means once violence is suppressed, look for a just solution. Don't take advantage of the fact that you have defeated the aggressor to become yourself an oppressor. Find a just solution from a position of strength, by which I'm referring to the needs to tend to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict once this is resolved. And if it is resolved in a good way, namely by the defeat of the tyrant, then I say we have to address ourselves to the Israeli-Palestinian problem, and promptly.
Israeli novelist Amos Oz speaking to us from his home in the Negev Desert in a conversation recorded earlier today. More of our conversation in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. Israeli novelist Amos Oz is my guest, and he's talking to us from his home in the Negev Desert in the south of Israel. I remember the first night last week when Israel was attacked by the Scud missiles, and I think it was the mayor of Bethlehem was surveying the damage, and he said, this was broadcast on American TV, he said something like, but we will go on enjoying life. And I was wondering if that's a kind of typical attitude in Israel, that in the
face
of... I don't
think it was the mayor of Bethlehem, which is an Arabic town, but one of the mayors in Israel probably said that. And this is, yes, it is a typical Israeli attitude, life must go on. And I must tell you, I'm very impressed by the cool, humorous, and basically optimistic attitude of the Israeli population. You see, the most common phrase that Israelis say to one another nowadays is, we have been through worst. And this is not the worst we have seen in our lifetime. Remember, time and again, Israel had to face alone a coalition of Arab nations committed to the destruction of Israel. This time we don't have to face it alone. We don't even have to lead the battle. So this is not the worst we have experienced. But at the same time, there is this subterranean, not subconscious, but subterranean realization. And this is important. A subterranean realization that if, heaven forbid, what happened to Kuwait 5 months ago would have happened to Israel, namely, an Arab army would have marched into Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and occupied the whole of Israel in one night, there would have been no international coalition. There would have been no international attempts to restore Israel. There would be, at best, a couple of angry leading articles in American newspapers calling the Arabs every name in the book for exterminating Israel, but that would be it. We know and we are aware of the facts that ultimately our lives are entirely in our own hands. We have no quote-unquote family.
How do you feel about the new American presence in Israel with the Patriot missiles? Do you find that reassuring?
I hope it's very interim. I feel very grateful. And yet I hope it's a very interim phenomenon. I hope within a matter of days the Israelis will be able to handle this equipment themselves. It has always been our standing attitude that we don't want anyone to fight for us and we don't want anyone to die for us. This has been another consensus issue in Israel, left and right and center, hooks and doves. We have never asked any foreign country, including blessed America, to sacrifice American lives for Israel. And we would like to send those American boys back home with bunches of flowers and plenty of gratitude and thanks. But we would like them to be back home safe and sound as soon as possible.
Amos Oz, I thank you very much for talking with us.
And thank you.
My best wishes for your safety.
Thank you very much.
Amos Oz speaking from Israel in a conversation recorded earlier today. Oz hopes to visit the United States in March when his latest novel, To Know a Woman, will be published in English.